This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Today we're focused on eastern North Carolina, where researchers are keeping a close eye on the coast. They're concerned about the way climate change is affecting sea levels. Western Carolina University professor Robert Young doesn't like what he's seeing. He says even the most conservative estimates show serious consequences for people living on North Carolina's eastern shore. Robert Young is the director of the study of the developed shorelines and a professor of coastal geology at Western Carolina University and joins us now. Welcome.
My pleasure.
Tell us about sea level rise. How fast is it rising?
Well, currently we have a rate of sea level rise globally that is around 3.1 millimeters a year. So that's, you know, depending on plus or minus where you are, 8 to 12 inches over the next century. But in general, the scientific community expects that rate to accelerate into the future. And the latest IPCC report is predicting somewhere between 24 and 36 inches of sea level rise by the end of the century.
Well, and that, of course, is vastly accelerated just in over the past century than what we've seen in centuries before.
We certainly have had an acceleration in the rate of sea level rise over the last couple hundred years. And even over the last 1,000 years, the rate of sea level rise that we're seeing today is significantly faster than it has been in the historical past and in the geological past over the last millennium.
So are we seeing any negative effects yet?
Well, you know, if we take a step back, if you are managing any coastal zone in the United States of America, sea level rise is something that we'll be dealing with for the foreseeable future. And you don't need to envision a nightmare scenario for rising sea level to understand that it's an important issue to discuss. So, you know, let's forget about projections that the rate of sea level rise is going to accelerate and that we may have 3 feet of sea level rise over the next 100 years. Let's just put that aside for a moment and just go with what we know. And that's the current tide gauge data that shows clearly that sea level is rising. And even if we have the absolute minimum rate of sea level rise over the next 100 years, which is just drawing a straight line from, you know, what we know has been happening for the last 10 years. What it tells you is this, that, you know, we may have 10 to 12 inches of sea level rise on a very flat, low elevation coast. That's still significant. And it also tells us that all of the coastal hazards and coastal issues that we're dealing with today, like the, you know, constant overwash on Highway 12 on the Outer Banks of North Carolina, all of these coastal erosion issues are not going to get any better. They're only going to get worse. And the cost of maintaining our coastal zone in place is only going to go up into the future. And so, you know, this is really what we should learn from the discussion of sea level rise, is that it's not going to go down. It's going to continue to go up. And all of the issues that we're facing today, the storm impacts, are only going to be worse in the future.
So what strategies is the state taking now to cope with this?
Well, the state of North Carolina has not done a whole lot in the last 5 years or so. We do have building setbacks that are intended to deal with storm hazards and recurring erosion hazards over the long term. So that is, in effect, a way to keep people sort of back from the coast and from harm's way. And other than that, the primary response to shoreline erosion and rising sea level in the state of North Carolina is to try to hold the shoreline in place with beach nourishment projects, basically pumping sand up along the shoreline to try to hold the shoreline in place in front of the oceanfront homes.
Well, so this gets to your what you were saying earlier about, look, just take the data you have now. It's bad now, and it's getting worse. What you would do in the face of that is different than if you believe that it's not getting worse, in which case you would shore things up again and, you know, maybe wait till the next storm, because the assumption, I guess, would be that it's not getting worse, so we'll just fix it and wait for the next storm, which might not be for 5 or 10 years.
Well, you know, I think the question that we need to ask is this. You know, how long can we hold all of the nation's shorelines in place? And so this is an issue that's bigger than just the state of North Carolina, because significant federal spending goes into beach nourishment projects and coastal defense projects. And if you will at least admit that it is impractical to hold every beach in place till the end of the next century for the entire East Coast and Gulf Coast of the U.S., that you know, we probably can't afford to do it financially. It's in some places it's very difficult to find the sand now, and that as we move into the future with continued sea level rise, we're going to have to do the projects more frequently. They're going to be more costly. Then, you know, what that suggests is that we really need some kind of a big picture national and state level plan for how to address these issues. And at least in North Carolina, we have initiated a beach and inlet management plan that is supposed to begin to address at least some of the issues regarding who gets what sand and where we can put it on the beach. But we spend significant federal dollars trying to hold these shorelines in place, and we have absolutely no plan for how to do it. So some beaches in North Carolina get federal monies, some beaches don't. Following Hurricane Sandy, the Corps of Engineers is going to spend about $4 billion on shoreline protection projects in the North Atlantic Division. That's, you know, Delaware, New Jersey, New York, and Connecticut. I mean, that's a tremendous amount of money. And we can't possibly guarantee that level of protection for the rest of the country. And so, you know, our primary concern with our approach to how we're managing the nation's shorelines is that there seems to be little realization that we can't do this everywhere for everybody.
But what would you do then? What would the plan look like if and global warming is not global warming, but climate change itself is a global problem. We can't solve that in North Carolina. If that's not going to go away, what do you do as a state in the face of that inevitable change in your shoreline?
Well, you know, the first step to dealing with global warming and sea level rise and climate change in the United States of America is having a sensible policy to respond to the hazards that we know exist and the rate of sea level rise that we know exists. And right now, we're not even doing that. So, you know, the first step is to, if we're gonna spend the kind of money that we're spending post-Sandy to rebuild the coast and to fortify beaches and to do shoreline protection projects, we shouldn't do it the way we do right now. And the way we spend money today is completely reactive. I mean, we're going to spend a huge amount of money building beaches in New Jersey and New York after Sandy. Well, where was the last time that we spent a tremendous amount of money doing coastal protection projects? Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama following Hurricane Katrina. I mean, basically what we do now is we wait for a storm to hit someplace, and then we throw a huge amount of money at it. It would be much more sensible if we decided we were going to spend some federal funds, if we at least had a national vision for how to spend that money. If we can't spend it everywhere, then we need to spend it in the places where it makes the most sense. So places where there might be a national priority for spending those federal funds. You know, Wallops Island, Virginia, a narrow barrier island that has NASA and Air Force launch facilities. Or, you know, we should be spending it in the places where we know it's going to last the longest, where it's going to make the most sense economically. But right now, we have no plan, and our spending is purely reactive. It's not proactive.
But the plans that you're talking about all sound like shoreline protection and reinforcement. I mean, it doesn't sound like there's any other plan. And all of that, if your projections and the projections of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, if those are right, then shoreline protection doesn't even seem like the right strategy, or is it?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, this has to be paired with a vision of some kind of managed retreat from the shoreline for some places. We can't protect all of these resort communities and all of the urbanized shorelines for the next 50 to 100 years. We're not going to be able to do it. And so we have to realize that at some point, in order to preserve these coastal economies, we need to begin at least talking about how you have a managed retreat. And managed retreat doesn't mean abandoning the shoreline. You know, it doesn't mean running in there, sending in the stormtroopers, and telling everybody to leave. What it does mean is that when you have a storm like Hurricane Sandy, we shouldn't put everything back in place exactly where it was using public funds. We need to find incentives for some communities to change their vulnerability footprint, get some of that infrastructure out of harm's way for the next storm. And primarily all we do right now, and this is all that's happening after Sandy, is we focus our money on lifting structures up, but we don't get anybody out of the way. And if all you do is elevate structures, that means you're still guaranteeing those folks that you're going to hold all the beaches and the shorelines in place in front of them.
Well, that answers part of my next question, which is sort of how do you do that politically? It's one thing to say once people have been moved out because of the storm, you don't put them back there. But, you know, people won't get out of the way of a storm when they can see it on the Weather Channel bearing down on them. The idea that you're going to use, you know, the IPCC as the leverage to tell people to move back from the shore sounds like a politically challenging proposition.
Right, which is why I don't like to talk about the IPCC too much. the fact of the matter is, that this is a very clear issue of fiscal policy. I mean, should federal taxpayers be creating this moral hazard where essentially we encourage folks who, let's just talk about, focus on the oceanfront primarily. This is largely investment property, okay? This is not people living in their primary homes. Even in these highly urbanized shorelines like New Jersey, the folks who are on the oceanfront, this is primarily investment property. And, you know, whose job is it to underwrite the risk of making the choice to invest those dollars on the oceanfront? And right now, essentially, the federal government is absorbing all of the risk for that decision. And it's bad fiscal policy. It ignores long-term climate change. It ignores the reality of the coastal hazards that we know exist today. And, you know, it just doesn't make sense. And so for me, the first step in a managed retreat is for at least some of those places, we need to get the public funds out of the picture. And if that's the case, if the local folks had a little more skin in the game financially, then they would be a lot more interested in the science that we like to talk about regarding coastal hazards and even long-term sea level rise.
Well, is it a difficult challenge? You said you don't want to talk about the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is that global panel that has looked at climate change for quite some time and whose results become controversial because politically people just sort of want to deny it. We have people in public office, you know, who are denying these scientific findings. But that's part of the debate. And I hear you clearly saying, look, it doesn't matter what the projections are. Here's what's happening today and what we're likely to see in the next 10 years. That's pretty obvious. Are we tied up now politically in this actual debate over whether climate change exists? And you sort of can't make the point anymore that it's not a matter of what happens in 100 years. It's the next 10 years.
You know, I think that the fact that the idea of climate change and sea level rise has become so politically charged makes advocating for any kind of sensible coastal management difficult, and that's unfortunate. And I do think that we climate scientists are at fault to a degree, you know, because if you start the conversation for how to do better coastal management with what's going to happen 100 years from now, and if you start with talking about 3 feet of sea level rise, well, a lot of folks, their eyes are just going to glaze over and they're going to throw up their hands and they're going to say they're doomed. So, you know, let's have a hurricane party until the end. And, you know, so I prefer now to start the conversation on the other end. Let's talk about the next decade or two. And let's talk about, you know, the things that nobody can argue about. Sea level is, in fact, rising. And we're going to have storms in the future. And right now, we're not doing a good job even managing for the fiscal realities of that scenario. And that's the first step in addressing long-term climate change. So, you know, I think that's the right place to start the conversation today.
And even in the short term, you'll get a debate. I mean, here it is, November 14th. It was 30 degrees today. Well, that's pretty normal. Hey, what's all this climate change stuff? It's a seasonal thing, and people tend to forget because now we're having a normal winter. There is no climate change.
Well, there's a confusion out there amongst a lot of folks of the difference between weather and climate. And, there's absolutely no argument that can suggest that the planet isn't warming. I mean, every single mountain glacier, with only a tiny number of exceptions, on the entire planet is retreating in both hemispheres, on all continents. I mean, the Earth sort of averages out the climate signal for us. The Earth tells us the climate is warming. And so, that's a place it's not even open for debate as to whether or not the planet is warming. The real question is how fast this is going to happen and what we should do about it.
And much of the debate is over whether it is, sort of human, whether human action, human activity on Earth is causing it. But I guess you could say, well, it wouldn't much matter why. You can debate that, and that would get you, that would lead to some policy questions about how we manage energy, which energies we use, how much we invest in fossil fuel, and whether we go into renewables. All of that based on whether it's human activity. But whether it's human activity or not, it's happening. And so I guess what you're saying is, we need to sort of reassess our financial and fiscal policies or management of these issues.
Yes, I mean, we could stand on the beach and argue about who's causing rising sea level, until we drown. It doesn't really matter. Either way, we're going to have to do a better job of managing our shorelines. Either way, we're going to have to deal with long-term sea level rise. And, that discussion about mitigating climate change and this very big picture global discussion, is really ancillary to the discussion about what we do about the realities that we know are happening and how we can make sensible decisions that will preserve the coastal economy. Okay, this is not about destroying the coastal economy in eastern North Carolina. It's about looking forward far enough so that we can make the right decisions where we're not wasting funds, we're not impacting the environment, and we are able to allow that coastal economy to be flexible enough to respond to these changes, preserve that economy so that we could all continue to go to the beach into the future and stay in a beach house when we go.
Are there some states where they're doing things differently and to your mind, more sensibly?
No.
Oh.
In short, I mean, the state of North Carolina for the last 25 years has had probably the best coastal zone management in the country. I mean, we were the first in the nation to ban hard structures, seawalls, groins, and jetties. I mean, we have had very forward-looking coastal management for more than two decades, and I have always been proud to walk around the rest of the country and talk about what we're doing in North Carolina. Now, I feel that we've hit the pause button a little bit in the state over the last 5 years, but I'm still optimistic that over the long run, we'll grab that mantle again of national leadership and doing a good job of responding to these changes in the coastal environment that we're experiencing and, get back to doing the job that we need to do to preserve this coastal economy and to preserve that coastal environment that we all are so proud of here in the state.
All right, Robert Young, always a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Frank.
Robert Young, director of the Program for the Study of the Developed Shorelines and a professor of coastal geology at Western Carolina University. Just ahead, a photographer chronicles the boats that make life on Core Sound possible. Stay with us.